This week's parasha is Parashas Vayetze, and we will start from page 150. Page 150. At this point in the parasha, Yaakov has left his father's house. He's arrived in Haran, and he had met Rachel by the well. Rachel told her father, Laban, and Laban has invited Yaakov to live with him. So, Pasuk Tesvav, second line from the top of the page. Vayomer Laban liYaakov. Laban said to Yaakov, Achi achi at vartani chinam. Is it because you're my brother, you'll work for me for free? Hagido li mamaskar techa. Let me know, tell me, what shall be your wages? Ulalaban shtei bonis. Laban had two daughters. Shemagdoila Leah, the name of the older one was Leah. Shemaktana Rachel, the name of the younger one was Rachel. Ve'ena Leah Rakois, the eyes of Leah were weak. Rachel Haisa Yefas Tair Bifas Mara, and Rachel was beautiful in appearance. Ve'ayav Yaakov is Rachel. Yaakov loved Rachel. Ve'yemer, and he said, Evotcha Shevashanim, I shall serve you 7 years. Rachel Bitcha Ktana, for Rachel, your younger daughter. And Laban said, Toiv titi oisalach, it is better that I give her to you, mititi oisalish acher, than I give her to someone else. Shiva imadi, remain here with me. Vayava Yaakov Rachel Shevashanim, Yaakov worked for Rachel 7 years. Vayubainav kemachadim, and these years were in his eyes, like a few days, vavasi oisa, because of his love for her. Now, we tend to look at this episode of Yaakov and Rachel as a love story. That's how we tend to look at it. And the reason we look at it that way is because the Pasuk first says, Rachel was beautiful, and then it says Yaakov loved Rachel. So if you just read those words, it would imply that the reason why Yaakov loved Rachel, why Yaakov wanted Rachel, was because of her beauty. And that is how we tend to think of what's happening here. But Rabbi Aaron Kotler Zatzal had a different explanation, a very different explanation, and he prefaces his, and really the basis of what he's saying is that to explain the behavior, the actions of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov in such a mundane way is really very disrespectful to them. More than that, he points out from the psukim themselves, from what the psukim have told us, that it doesn't make any sense to say that this was that Yaakov was marrying, loved Rachel because he was infatuated with her, because he fell in love with her, as we would put it. And he brings out 2 points. Number one, when Laban asks him, "What are your wages?" So Yaakov says, "I'll work 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter." Now, Laban didn't ask for those 7 years. This is Yaakov's idea. If Yaakov loves Rachel, why would he decide? Why would he offer 7 years of work before he marries Rachel? That doesn't make any sense. Why would you put on yourself such a long period of time before you could actually marry her? That's number one. Number two, the pasuk says that he worked for 7 years, but the 7 years were like a few days because he loved her. Well, if the reason he wants to marry her is because he fell in love with her, then 7 years aren't a few days.
A
7 years like 70 years. when you're the further you are away from something that you desire, that you want, the more excruciating it is, the harder it is, not easier it is. So if the whole basis here of Yaakov's love for Rachel is some kind of infatuation, is some kind of, some kind of a selfish desire, fulfillment of self-gratification, these things just don't make any sense. And therefore, he explained, as the other Mefarshim explain, that Yaakov's marriage to Rachel was not about beauty. And it wasn't about infatuation. It wasn't about self-gratification. Yaakov understood that Rachel was his bashert. He understood that Rachel was meant to be his wife. And not just to be his wife, but to be the mother of the Jewish people. It's Yaakov understood that, Hashem had chosen Avraham. Avraham had Yitzchak, Yitzchak had Yaakov. And and the foundation of Klal Yisrael, the foundation of the nation of Hashem, had to be created. Avram didn't do it because he had Yishmael. Yitzchak didn't do it because he had an Esav. Yaakov was the one that was destined to do it. He was destined to have 12 righteous sons, that they would be the foundation of Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people. Yaakov understands that. Yaakov understands that that's what Rachel is going to be. But because he understands that he and Rachel together have to create the foundation of Klal Yisrael, Yaakov understands that he can't just go ahead and marry her. Yaakov has to go through a process of elevating himself, of sanctifying himself, of growing spiritually, of growing closer to Hashem. That is when he needs to prepare himself to do so. So when his father and mother send him to go get married, so we know that. What was Yaakov doing until then all the time? Yeshiva Yolim, he's sitting and learning Torah. Now he's got to go, and he has to go find a wife, marry a woman, build a family. So before Yaakov goes when Yaakov leaves his father's house, before he actually arrives in Haran, he takes a detour. He goes to the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Ever, being the son and grandson of Nayach. They had a yeshiva. They had an academy of learning Torah. And he stopped there for 14 years. He learned there for 14 years before he actually went to Haran. That's because Yaakov understands that before he leaves Eretz Yisrael, he has to build himself up with more Torah. He has to sanctify himself and prepare himself and make himself worthy of creating the Jewish people. And then when he arrives by Lavan, says Rabbi Aaron Kudler, when he arrives by Lavan, and now he actually knows this will be his wife, and he is going to have to marry this woman and build Klal Yisrael in the house of Lavan. Not just merely, you know, he has to do with this Russia. He understands that he needs 7 more years of preparation. He has to not prepare under Lavan. He has to prepare while working for Lavan. He's got to prepare himself. He's got to sanctify himself, elevate himself, to be the father of Klal Yisrael. Now, you may wonder and say, okay, well, I can understand, that stopping in Shem Ve'Ever, where he sat and learned Torah, would be a state of spiritually preparing himself, of elevating himself, of making himself closer to Hashem. But now he's going to work for 7 years. What's the preparation there? So the concept of many Mefarshim point out is that, you know, when you were a shepherd, you definitely worked. But you were really you were out on your own, you know, away from everyone. And you actually had a lot of time for thinking. You know, it's not for no reason that Moshe Rabbeinu was a shepherd, David HaMelech was a shepherd, Yaakov was a shepherd. These were actually a situation, these were jobs, but jobs that actually gave you also a lot of opportunity to separate yourself from everyone, to be in a certain solitude, and be able to focus on what you want to focus. So Yaakov actually was preparing himself in a sense of where he was kind of, at the same time that he was working for Lavan, he was again having the solitude and the time to also contemplate Torah and Hashem, and again to keep growing himself until the point comes that he is ready to marry Rachel and to actually start building the Jewish people. So when Yaakov offers 7 years, it's not the reason for 7 years is because Yaakov knows these are another 7 years that he needs for preparation to be the father of Klal Yisrael. And when the Pasuk says that the 7 years were like a few days, that's because it may take 7 years to get there. But if this is what gets you closer to your goal, this is what brings you to your goal, then it's not as long as it would seem. If your 7 years, you see them as hindering your ability to attain something, then it feels a lot longer than 7 years. But if you know that this is the process that allows you to get to your goal, then it doesn't feel longer. It can even feel shorter, because you know that this is what's allowing you to attain your goal. So therefore, the point that we're making at this point in this part of the parsha is that, as Rabbi Aaron Kudler pointed out, we need to understand, we have to stop looking at the story of Yaakov and Rachel in a childish way, like a love story. That's not what it is. What it is about Yaakov realizes he meets Rachel. He realizes this is meant to be his wife to build Klal Yisrael. That's why he's marrying her. And the whole 7-year process is another stage of preparation, of sanctification, of elevating himself, be able to be the father of Klal Yisrael. Now, what you still should ask, though, is, so why does the Torah mention her beauty? I mean, if that really wasn't the point, why does the Torah mention it? So there are those who explain that the beauty of Rachel, which again clearly was a physical beauty, it was an outward beauty, but it was really a beauty. It was an outward beauty that really reflected her inner beauty. It was a certain type of beauty that comes from when a person is inside so righteous and so perfect that somehow or another reflects itself in her physical appearance. So it's not just trying to say that she was a beautiful woman, and that's why Yaakov is marrying her. Rather, this kind of beauty is meant to be a reflection of an inner beauty. So again, it's all not describing just this kind of a love story between the two of them, but about Yaakov realizing this was his wife, his partner in life to build Klal Yisrael. That's why he was marrying her, and that is why he was going. All these years until he finally brings himself to go and to marry Rachel, all those years before, and they're all preparation to make himself worthy and elevate himself to be worthy of being the father of Klal Yisrael.
Why we cannot combine two ideas? Why not to remove love? This is one aspect he wants to
be. Because then why would it be only for a few days?
No, but if this is exactly love,
It's a different type of love. It's not a love that's based on attraction. It's a love based on understanding that this is who you're meant to accomplish with, and everything that was involved in it was being able to get to that point. It wasn't about getting to it. It was all about getting to the point of being able to really accomplish what you needed to accomplish. So there, if the love was the kind of love that we feel, then that kind of love, it would be hard. It wouldn't be easy. The fact that it's easy is because Yaakov's love is not a self-gratification love. It's a love for her for what they will together accomplish in serving Hashem. And that needed many years of preparation that he felt that this is the preparation that he needed to be able to accomplish that.
No, but this can be two different things. He loves one thing, but attraction also. He is human being. Why can attract woman?
Because we're trying to say that's not the main point of the Torah.
No, but not main.
So maybe there is that, but that's not.
It doesn't work.
Excuse me.
To remove completely love.
Who says?
Story,
who says?
You said.
No, I said to make it all about love story. If you're making it all about a love story, then it doesn't make sense. Now, if you're going to say that, I would think that there is part of that attraction. I think it's pretty hard to say there was like a few days. You want to say that primarily his love was the kind of love that overshadowed the other one, but the other one was there somewhat also? Perhaps. But the point is, though, that the main focus of what the Torah is talking about, the love the Torah is talking about, is not a love that we define it as attraction, because then the rest of the thing doesn't make sense. If the Torah is saying that these 7 years were like a few days, then that means what we're dealing with here is a different type of love. You want to say, primarily, and that's what overpowers everything? Fine, say it like that. But it's not a focus on just a love of two people falling in love. It's a love about getting to be able to know that they will be serving Hashem together, and all the preparation is to be able to get to that point, and that's why it's a few days.
But Leah also was part of creation in Jewish people.
Yeah, because...
I never say about he loved...
That's Leah. Right, because Yaakov at that point didn't realize that. It took time. Because later on she says, my husband will love me, this and that. You know, you're right. At the beginning, in his mind, Leah wasn't the one. And therefore, yeah, whatever love you want to say, it wasn't there because Leah wasn't, he didn't, in his mind, Leah wasn't supposed to be his wife. Afterwards, he realized that it was. And it actually took time because of the way that Leah became his wife. You see from the psukim and the names that she gave her children that it took time for Yaakov to be able to be at peace with her. But even then, the peace with her is that idea that she is building the Jewish people with him. And, as is pointed out by many of the Mefarshim, and again, we don't have to focus on this, but everybody knew Rachel was still the main wife. Everybody understood that she was still the main one. But that's not part of our discussion right now.
Yes, usually, first life is first love is first love.
But that's not what this is. That's not necessarily the explanation here. The explanation here is that it's all about understanding which one is meant to be the one. Now again, it needs more explanation because at the end of the day, Leah had more children than Rachel, right? Leah had more children than Rachel, so you have to know what it means that Rachel was Akeres Habayis. She was the main one of the house. You're bringing up a valid point. What does it mean she was the main one when Leah is the one who had more children? But again, that's a good question. But what we're showing from here is that the focus of the story is not a love story, because then what the Torah is saying wouldn't make sense. Therefore, the focus, the love here that we're talking about is not a love that we talk about, but a love on a spiritual sense, in the sense of understanding that she was meant to be the one to build the Jewish people with him. And that's what the love was about.
He realizes he's doing the right thing. He's feeling it.
Okay.
That's the love. It's not the word love that we know doesn't fit here. You like this saying. It's not an attraction.
Okay.
He feels her. With her, he's going to do what he's supposed to do.
Okay.
And they're going to get there.
Okay.
That's what I mean.
Okay. Now, so we know that following this, what happens? So Yaakov, after the 7 years, says to Laban, give me my wife. And we know the story, how he switches. Instead of giving him Rachel, he ends up marrying Leah. Okay. So let's read. Let's read three lines from the bottom. Pasuk Chaf Hei. Vayehi v'abayker, and it was in the morning. V'inehi Leah. Behold, it's Leah. Vayomer el Lavan, and he said to Lavan, Mazois asisali, what is it that you've done to me? Halei barach levadati imach, did I not work for Rachel with you? V'lamari misani, why have you tricked me? Vayomer Lavan, so Lavan says, this is page 152, Vayasa kein b'mekaymenu, this shall not be done in our place, Vaseis hatzi'ira lefnei abechira, to give the younger before the older. Balei shivu azais, finish this week, meaning this week is the week of Sheva Brachas, you just got married, finish up the week of Sheva Brachas, v'nitna lecha, and we will give, and it will be given to you, gamesais, also this one, ba'avoida shetavari modi, for the work that you will work with me, another 7 years. So Laban says, look, can't give the older before the younger. So I gave her the older. You worked for her for 7 years. Now you want the younger one? I'm not going to make you wait for 7 years. You can marry her now, but you can only marry her if you work for another 7 years. Yaakov did so. And he completed the week. And then he gave to Yaakov Rachel, his daughter, for a wife. Okay. So, it's very interesting here how Yaakov was tricked. Laban said, gives his excuse. And the Laban says, you want Rachel another 7 years. And we don't find that Yaakov put up a fight. He just did it. He just accepted it. Now, you could ask, why doesn't Yaakov stand up for himself and say, like, what, another 7 years? I just worked for Rachel for 7 years. You tricked me and gave me Leah. All right, so I'll be married to Leah, but why do I have to work another 7 years for Rachel? I worked for her already. That is really what he should be arguing back to to Laban. He doesn't do it. Okay? So, if I were to ask you, why doesn't he do it? So you could say, and this is what I would say off the bat, that is that, well, he knows Lavan. He knows what kind of person Lavan is. If Lavan says 7 years, you can fight with him, till you turn blue. It's not going to help. So finished. There was no point of fighting back because there just was no point. Reb David Feinstein offers a different explanation. It's a very nice explanation. His explanation is the following. He says, okay, imagine if Yaakov didn't work for another 7 years. So he's married to Leah, he's married to Rachel. So what does Leah say to herself? Leah says to herself, you know, he worked 7 years for Rachel, right? And I'm the one that he got tricked into, right? She clearly is not going to feel too good about herself. And we know how much she realized that, you know, the fact that how she got married to Yaakov created a certain separation that needed to be brought back together. Yaakov worked for another 7 years because Yaakov wanted Leah to feel she's also worth 7 years of work. By now, Leah knows that Yaakov worked for Rachel 7 years because Leah knows he worked for Rachel. But if now he's ready to work another 7 years for Rachel, which means the first 7 years were for her, he's basically saying to her, the 7 years for you, they're also worth it. And the truth is, according to the way we're saying until now, that the 7 years were a preparation for building the Jewish people, Yaakov understands Leah's part of that. Leah's worth that too. Leah's worth that too. But again, this 7 years of the second seven, that's what David Feinstein wants to say, that he went for another, he didn't fight back, and he was ready to do another 7 years of work because of the fact that he wanted Leah to feel that at the end, if the first 7 years were for her, they were worth it. Okay. Now, another interesting thing to point out here is the fact that Yaakov, when it says it was in the morning, behold, it's Leah, Vayomer Elavan, Yaakov says to Lavan, what is this that you did to me? Didn't I work for Rachel? Why did you trick me? Okay. So what kind of tone of voice do you think Yaakov used when he spoke to Lavan?
A little mad.
You think he's a little mad? Doesn't say anywhere in the pasuk he got mad. Later on in the parsha, we see he gets angry. Later on in the parsha, he gets angry at Rachel. Later on in the parsha, expresses he got agitated with Lavan. In the parsha, when he's leaving Lavan, and Lavan comes and he searches him for everything, and it says Vayichal Yaakov Vayarav Lavan. Yaakov doesn't get agitated when he feels he should be agitated. And here, there's not a mention. There's not a mention of the fact that he gets angry. He spoke to him. He got, next morning, he goes to his shver. He goes and tells me. So he goes, excuse me, shver. Okay. He goes, excuse me, dad. I worked for Rachel, and it was Leah, and why'd you trick me? I mean, he's talking to him. Vayomer means he talked. It doesn't say he talked angrily. He talked. So it's a very interesting thing. Yaakov is able to keep his cool. Yaakov is able to keep calm and collected even after all that. 7 years of work, and as far as he's not sure if he's going to get Rachel. You know, 7 years of work and not for what he worked for.
If you give him the business 7 years.
So, it means that Yaakov clearly understood, you know. Yaakov was calm. Yaakov was cool. So where does a person find it within himself to be that way? Where does a person find that after all this, 7 years of work, working towards something, and then basically being cheated out of it, and keeping calm, where does the strength come for that?
Learn from Nachum Ishgamza.
He was after him. He was after him. But it's the same idea. Now, I'm going to show you another example in this week's parasha that relates to this. And that is, okay, on page 152, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, verse 31. Vayar Hashem kisnu Leah. Hashem saw that Leah was unloved. Vayiftach es Rachma, he opened her womb, v'rachel akara, and Rachel was barren. Vatar Leah vateled bein. Leah conceived, she bore a son, vatikra shemai Reuven. And she called his name Reuven. Ki amra, for she said, Ki ra Hashem ba'ani, Hashem has seen my affliction. Ki ata ya'avani ishi, for now my husband will love me. Meaning, if she's the one to give birth first, right, then whatever, in her mind, whatever hard feelings Yaakov has for her because of the way that things were done. And it actually, the Midrashim roots talk about how Yaakov had some negative reaction to Leah in the way that she did, and for going along with this. But now Leah says, if Yaakov sees that I'm the one to first give birth, then he'll see that I am worthy and he'll love me. I mean, he won't have that certain negative feeling towards me for going through with this trick. Okay, so the Pasuk says, she called him Reuven. The name Reuven has the word Reu in it, to see. And that's what the Pasuk says. Leah said, Hashem has seen my affliction. Now Rashi tells us that there is another message in the name Reuven. And this Rashi is on the bottom of the page, on the right, on the bottom of Rashi, the second line from the bottom of the right column. Vatikra Shemay Reuven, she called, Leah called his name Reuven. Rabbi Seinu Pirshu, our sages taught, Amra, she said, Re'u ma bein b'ni leben chami, look at the difference between my son and my father-in-law's son, referring to Esav, Shemacha b'chayra le'yakov, that he sold the firstborn right to Yaakov. V'zeh le'machra le'yosef, this one, referring to her son Reuven, who lost his firstborn right to Yosef, when, after the death of Rachel, Yaakov moved his bed into Bilhah's tent. Reuven felt he should have moved his bed into Leah's tent, so he did it for him. And because of that act, Reuven lost the firstborn right. So he did not, v'zeloi machro le Yosef, Reuven did not sell his firstborn right to Yosef, v'lo'ir olav, he didn't complain about him. He never complained about it to him. Not only that, not only did he not complain, he even wanted to take him out from the pit. He wanted to save his life. Okay, so what's happening here is like this. We know that Reuven was the firstborn to Yaakov, and as the firstborn to Yaakov, he is the Bachar. He should have the firstborn right. The firstborn right, we see later on in the Torah, means that when the Jewish people would eventually enter the land of Israel, there would be one tribe that would get a double portion, which is the law of the firstborn son. The firstborn son gets a double portion of the inheritance. Reuven, because of the fact, lost his firstborn right, because as the Talmud says, when Yaakov and Rachel, when Rachel was alive, Yaakov's bed was primarily in Rachel's tent. When Rachel died, Yaakov moved it to Bilhah, who was the maidservant of Rachel. And Reuven felt that was disrespectful to his mother, because after all, Bilhah's a maidservant and Leah's a regular wife. And he went and he moved that bed, the bed of Yaakov, into Leah's tent. And basically, you know, getting into that part of his father's life was considered a disrespectful act. And therefore, because of his hastiness in doing that, he lost the firstborn right. Who got the firstborn right? Yosef, the firstborn of Rachel. Okay? So Leah is saying here, when she says, when she gives her baby the name Reuven, and again, Reuven actually has two words in it. Reuven, see and son. So Reuven means, according to this explanation brought down in Rashi, look at the son. Look at my son and see how different he is than my father-in-law's son, which is Esav. Esav sold the firstborn right to Yaakov. He willingly sold the firstborn right. He knew he did it. And afterwards, he still has complaints against Yaakov about Yaakov taking away the firstborn right from him. Reuven loses his firstborn right to Yosef, and he doesn't have anything, and you don't find him ever saying anything against Yosef. Not only that, when the other brothers want to kill Yosef, who's the one who tries to save him? Reuven. They want to kill him. Reuven says to them, don't lay your hands on him, throw him into the pit. And the Torah testifies that Reuven did that so that he should be able to go back and save Yosef. So see the difference between the two. So Rav Cheskel Levinstein Zatzal points out, makes the following point. And I'll bring out his point in the following way. We have Esav's way of doing things, right? We have Esav's reaction to the way he lost his firstborn right, and we have Yosef's reaction to how he lost the firstborn right. Which one is normal? Which one's the normal one?
Esav.
Esav's the normal one. Esav is reacting. Esav is acting like a person normally would.
Yeah.
Our nature is that whenever somebody else has something that we see as ours, no matter how he got it, we're gonna have complaints again, and we're gonna bear a grudge against him. That was Esav. Esav was reacting like a regular person. Reuven's reaction to Yosef, that's beyond. That's beyond the regular human nature. That's beyond. That Reuven should lose it to Yosef and want to even save his life and not hold anything negative against him, that he's not tainted by the fact that he lost a firstborn right to Yosef, that's above and beyond. So there too, where does Reuven get the strength to be able to be that way? How does Reuven get the strength to be able to be in control of himself that way? And the answer is very basic. Yeah. And it's one word. And the one word is emuna. Emuna means belief in Hashem. Belief in that everything comes from Hashem. Yaakov thought Rachel was meant to be his wife. That's what he thought. And when he found Leah, he realized that that's apparently not the plan. The plan of Hashem is that Leah should be his wife also. Now that doesn't mean that because now Hashem made it that Leah is his wife, that now he just sits back and does nothing. Look, he knew he was supposed to marry Rachel. He made up to marry Rachel. Eleven tricks him. He's got to get up and stand up for himself. No one says you don't stand up for yourself. Because somebody does something against you and you take that as Hashem's actions, doesn't mean that you sit back and do nothing. But you don't get angry either. Yaakov being in that, having that self-control, not being angry, really displays how much emunah, how much belief he has that everything comes from Hashem. Reuven's the same way. Reuven knows what he did, and Reuven understands that if Yaakov, his father Yaakov, took away the firstborn right from him, this was Hashem's decree. And if this is Hashem's decree, then it's not about Yosef, and he doesn't have anything against Yosef. And really, this idea we could see in the Sefer HaChinuch when he talks about the prohibitions of Loi Sikaim V'Loi Sitar, which means do not take revenge and do not bear a grudge. Do not take revenge. Revenge means, the example the Gemara gives is, I ask you for your hammer, and you say no. You come back and ask me for my saw, and I say no. That's revenge. Loi Sitar, bearing a grudge, means I ask you for your hammer, you say no, you then come and ask me for my saw, and I say, I'll give you my saw, not like you didn't give me your hammer.
You didn't give me yours. Right?
Now, you don't have to say that for the prohibition of Loi Sitar. It means bearing a grudge. So we're not allowed to take revenge, we're not allowed to bear a grudge. So if I were to ask you, why does the Torah forbid us to take revenge? And why does the Torah forbid us to bear a grudge? Why? If we wanted to know why the Torah did that, what would you say the explanation is?
Because it's supposed to be that way.
Yeah.
Why?
Because life is very difficult. You always come into these situations.
Yeah.
Oh, you.
Meaning the situation will get worse. Revenge only makes the situation worse, not better. Bearing a grudge is not going to help you. It's only going to make things worse. That would be the simple explanation, or the first explanation we would give. It's actually the second one that the Sefer HaChinuch gives. The Sefer HaChinuch, his first explanation as to why you don't take revenge is because Sefer HaChinuch says nothing happens in life, good or bad, unless Hashem decrees it upon you. And if it's not met, and if you don't deserve it, it doesn't happen. And therefore, the Chinuch is talking about when someone else hurts you, that means someone else was practicing their Bechira, their free will. No one forced them to do it. Right? It's their free will that they're doing. And still the Sefer HaChinuch says, even when someone practices their free will to hurt you, at the end of the day, it doesn't happen to you. He can't do it to you unless Hashem decrees that it could happen. And therefore, says the Sefer HaChinuch, There's no point of revenge. Revenge means you did something to me, and that's why I want to get back at you. It's not between you and that person, says the Sefer HaChinuch. It's between you and the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's between you and Hashem. It happened because Hashem brought it upon you. And there can be different, there can be many reasons why Hashem brings it upon us. There can be a number of reasons. We can get into big philosophical discussions now about why things happen to people. But at the end of the day, the point is the Ribbono Shel Olam has his reason. Why it's going to happen to you, it doesn't happen to you unless it's meant to happen to you, unless he decrees it to happen to you. And therefore, it's not something that it's between you and this other person, it's between you and the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now again, that doesn't mean either that you sit back and say, well, you know, the Ribbono Shel Olam is bringing this, so therefore I just sit back and don't do anything about it. You do, that just because he's brought you this problem doesn't mean you don't do anything about it. But at the same time, you realize that it's coming from Hashem, and therefore when it comes to grudges, when it comes to revenge, it's not something that has no place. Because that is when your person takes revenge, that's because he feels the other person hurt him. And because the other person hurt him, therefore he wants to take revenge back. That is a problem because, as the Sefer HaChinuch says, it's not the other person who hurt you. This is all from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now that doesn't mean the other person doesn't have to ask forgiveness from you, because it was his free will. He decided to do it.
He brought it through him.
He decided to do it. He happened to land up being Hashem's vehicle, but he decided to he volunteered for the job.
Right.
And therefore, if he wants forgiveness, he has to ask you for forgiveness. Right. But at the same time, how you look at things, right? How you look at things should be that you understand that it's not him that did this to you. It comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Yaakov realizes that, and he realizes it very well. Reuven realizes that very well. And therefore, their reactions are beyond your regular human reaction. Because their emuna is what they live with. That's what influences their conduct. Now, on this Rashi that we just read, okay, where the Pasuk says she called him Reuven, because Hashem saw my affliction. And Rashi brings down from the Gemara that there was another explanation here. Now, first of all, Leah is seemingly saying, look at the difference between my son and Esav. Now, Esav we know about, right? Reuven, this didn't happen yet. He's a baby, right? He didn't switch the beds yet. Yosef's not even born yet for the brothers to... The rest of all the brothers aren't born yet either to have a problem. Right? So, it would seem that she's having a prophecy here. Now, do we learn when we have these kinds of Rashis, do we learn that in her prophecy she's really prophesizing and knowing the future? And so everything else that's going to come, she knows, but she just doesn't say. I mean, or she did say it. What's happening here? So, according to some commentaries... she may not have realized this prophecy that she was saying. She may not have realized this other message. But this other message, the Gemara says this other message lied in the name she gave. The name Reuven was not only for one reason, it was for another reason also. In her mind, she was giving it because she's trying to say, Hashem sees my affliction. But the sages saw there is something else here also. There is something in her also. When she gave the name Reuven, the Ribbono Shel Olam actually had another reason for her to give the name Reuven. And that was to bring out this idea of the difference between Reuven and between Reuven and Esav. Now, whenever we find, you know, especially in a case like this, the Pasuk gives us a reason, right? The Pasuk says the reason, right? Now, for the Gemara, to add another reason, there has to be some kind of a question. There has to be some kind of question in what the Torah said that leads us to say there must be something more here. Okay, so what made the Gemara say that the reason that she gave for Reuven's name wasn't the only reason? Hashem had another reason for it. So one explanation I saw is that the name is Reuven, right? There's two words in that name, Reuven. Reu, see, and Bain, son. Now, in the reason that she gives, which is Hashem has seen my affliction, for now my husband will love me. So the Re'u, the C part of the name Reuven, we get it. Re'e Hashem kira Hashem ba'anya. Hashem saw my affliction. What about the Bain part? Where is the Bain part in this name, in this reason given? Now you could say that maybe it's Yahavani, maybe Bini Bain Yahavani. I'm not so sure if that's correct. It could very well be that the Bain part means son. You know, I have a son because I show so my affliction. But it doesn't say that in the Pasuk, right? The Pasuk doesn't bring that out. The Pasuk seemingly is only explaining half the name, not the other half of the name. And therefore, the Gemara understood there's something else going on here. And in the second explanation, it's Reuven. Reuven, look at my son. Look at my son. See how my son, the conduct of my son, and see the conduct of my father-in-law's son. That's one explanation that's given. Another explanation that's given by the Vilna Gaon is the following. So, when we read how she gave birth to Reuven, okay, that was Pasuk Lamed Beis. The Pasuk said, Vatar Lea Batelet Bein, Vatikra Shmei Reuven. She conceived, she gave birth, she called him Reuven, Ki Amra, Kirasham Ba'ani, Kato Yavani Ishi, and then the reason is given, right? She called him Reuven. Why? Because Hashem saw my affliction, for now my husband will love me. Okay? Next pasuk, next son. Vatar oi, she conceived again, vatelet bein, she gave birth to a son, vatema, and she said, Ki shama Hashem, ki snu anoichi, Hashem has heard that I was unloved, vayitali gamesei, and also gave me this one. Vatikra shmei Shimon, she called him Shimon. Do you notice the difference between this pasuk and the order of things by Reuven's name, the order of things by Shimon's name? By Reuven's name, it says she called him Reuven, then the reason's given. Mm. By Shimon, the reason is given, and then it says she gave him the name. And the same thing happens by Pasuk Lamed Hey. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Vataroid Vatelad Bain, she conceived again and gave birth to a son, Vatim, and she said, Ata Pami Lavaishi I lie, this time my husband will connect will attach himself to me, Kilati Lai Shlay Shabanim, I have given birth to three sons, Al Ken Karashmai Levi, therefore she called him Levi. Again, the reason before the actual name. And the same thing in the by Yehuda. Vatare Vatelad Bain, she conceived again, she had a son, Vatim, and she said, Hapam Aidas Hashem, this time I will give thanks to Hashem, Al Kain Karishma Yehuda, therefore she called him Yehuda. Again, the reason before the name. So how come by Reuven, it's the name before the reason? Why is Reuven different than all the other sons? And therefore, says the Vilna Gaon, the Gemara Soa, that if the Torah is giving the name before the reason, then that implies that the name was appropriate beyond the reason. Meaning the name was a name even without that reason. There's a name, Reuven. There's a reason, but there's another reason. The point of saying the name Reuven first is to show that the name Reuven kind of stands separate, could stand separate from the reason given in the Pasuk. And that's because there was another message there. Another message there was, look at the difference between my son and Esav. So, I was thinking the following, if I can share this idea with you. Okay, so at the end, what's happening here is that Leia is prophesizing, right? Whether she realizes or not, she's prophesizing. And she's saying this prophecy about the fact that her son will be different than Esav. Why is she having this prophecy now? What is the reason for this prophecy? What's the reason for it? Why is it happening now? She gives birth to Reuven, and right now at the birth of Reuven, this point is being brought out, at least to us, right? To we who learned the Torah, is being brought out to us that in Reuven's name lies, there's a difference between Reuven and Esav. Why is that so important? Why do we need? Why did that need to happen?
She was supposed to marry Esav.
Yeah.
So perhaps the explanation is that, right? The Gemara actually says that why were Leah's eyes weak?
Because
she was crying. Because everybody was saying, and this was the assumption, Yaakov has Yitzchak has two sons, Rivka has two sons, Laban has two daughters, the older to the older, the younger to the younger. So when Leah heard about that, it says she used to ask people, you know, who were coming, going back and forth between Haran and Eretz Yisrael, who's this? Well, tell me about this Esav. And she did not hear good things.
I imagine.
So it says that she cried and she cried. That because she didn't want to fall, she didn't want to have to marry a Russia like Esav. And at the end, the Gemara says, do you know why actually, and because of her crying not to marry Esav, that's why she gave birth first. When the Pasuk says by Reuven, but the Pasuk before Reuven's born, Hashem saw that Leah was hated. That's a very hard, very drastic word to use. Now, whatever it means, the Gemara says that on such a righteous person like Leah, not appropriate to say that about her, that she was snua. Right? Whatever it means, it clearly means there was some kind of an issue, right? But to go ahead and say Leah was hated, it's just the Torah wouldn't talk about a righteous woman like that. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the Torah was using that word snua, hated. It's actually referring to her praise. Ki snua Leah doesn't mean Leah was hated, but it's referring to the fact that how much Leah didn't want to be together with the hated person. How much she hated the idea of having to marry Esav, and that was the merit in which she gave birth first. Okay. So it could be that, so fine. Leah cried. She didn't want to marry Esav. Okay? But in some ways, you know, if she was supposed to marry Esav, and you see she didn't marry Yaakov in the regular way, right? That perhaps she really wasn't worthy of Yaakov. Okay, perhaps she really wasn't worthy of Yaakov. The fact that now she has a child, Reuven, who will be so righteous, right? Who will be so different than Esav, that's a terrorist testimony that Leah was worthy of marrying Yaakov. She may not have had the same qualities as Rachel. She may not have had those qualities as Rachel. But the Torah is testifying now that if she actually gave birth to a son who was so different than Esav, who was so righteous, even more righteous than Esav, when Esav isn't being Esav-like, he's being like everybody else, bearing grudges, which we all do. But if she could have a son that was so unlike Esav, then that means the Torah is testifying that in no way whatsoever was she worthy of marrying Esav. Mm-hmm. But rather, she is worthy of marrying Yaakov, and that's why she could have such a righteous son like Reuven. Okay. Now, one other point on this Rashi. Now, okay, so Leah is having some kind of a prophecy, and she points out how Esav has hard feelings against Yaakov, because Yaakov got his firstborn right, even though he sold it to Yaakov. Reuven doesn't display any animosity. Mm-hmm. Doesn't display any animosity. And he not only doesn't display any animosity, he actually tries to save Yaakov.
Yosef.
Now that only makes sense to say that at that point of time, Reuven already knew that he lost his firstborn right.
Mm-hmm. That
would only make sense to say that. Okay. Now, the truth is that when do we find in the Torah, where do we find in the Torah that Yaakov gave the firstborn right to Yosef? Where do we find that?
At his
death.
Right.
When he brings his sons, right? When Yosef, Yaakov's about to die, Yosef brings his sons to be blessed, that is where Yaakov tells Yosef, you got the double portion. That would seem that
Up to that point,
nobody knew necessarily.
Yeah.
But this Rashi is saying that. Right, but you can't make sense of that. You can't say that if according to what this Gemara and Brachas, Rashi and the Gemara and Brachas is saying, because the whole point is that Reuven didn't hold anything against Yosef. That means he had to know by then. So the Marsha, the commentary of the Marsha and the Gemara Baba Basra, because the Gemara Baba Basra talks about this business about how Leah was crying and everything like that. So the Gemara Baba Basra says like this. The Gemara Baba Basra says that Rachel should have been the one to give birth first. The Bechor should have come from Rachel. She was the main wife. She was the one he was supposed to marry first. Mm-hmm. And therefore, she should have been the one to have the firstborn. How did it happen that Leah got the firstborn? Because of the fact that she cried over the fact that she didn't want to marry Esav. And therefore, she merited to give birth first. She merited to have to get the firstborn. Okay? Therefore, if we say that it was really destined to be that Rachel's son, Rachel's firstborn should be the Bechar, so then when Reuven commits this sin, right? And he realizes he committed a sin. Because actually, I'm sure you're familiar with the fact that when Yosef was sold, it says Reuven wasn't there. Where was Reuven? One opinion is he was busy doing tshuva for what he did by Bilhah. Mm-hmm. Right? So he knew he did something wrong. Mm-hmm. And therefore, says the Marsha, that if the Gemara says that Rachel was really supposed to be the firstborn, Rachel was supposed to give it to the firstborn, and it was given to Leah's son because of her special merit, and now Reuven lost it because of the sin, now Reuven did a sin, and he realized what he did wrong, we can say that at that point he already realized that he did a sin, he lost it, and it's going to go back to where it should have been. It's going to go to where it should have been. It's going to go to Rachel. Mm-hmm. If the point is that, the point I believe that if I say the Marsha correctly is that if there is this, if everybody knows, so to speak, right, that Rachel should have been, had the firstborn, but Leah got it through her special merit, so then when Reuven, then already we can say that when Reuven realizes he's committed this sin, it could very well be that he realizes that he forgot, that he lost the firstborn, right? And where's it going to go? It's going to go to where it was supposed to be. It's going to go back to where it's supposed to be, which is Rachel's firstborn. Mm-hmm. And therefore, therefore, at the end, you know, Yaakov mentions it to Yosef, makes that, so to speak, official later on. Because that's when it's relevant. But we know where it's going to go now. We know where it's going to land up. Reuven knows he lost it. We know where it's going to land up. And therefore, he could have had the negative feelings, and he didn't. And that was the greatness that Leah, that was portrayed in his name, Reuven.